January 8, 1952, George A. Palmer talking with Mr. Frank Dreis.
Mr. Dreis, I noticed from your application that you came to work for President Roosevelt, or at least for the Roosevelt family, in July of 1931. What was the occasion for your coming to work on the Roosevelt estate?
Well, I came down looking for a job.
Came down from where?
From, I was out of a job myself. I got out of the button shop in March, and I had done odd jobs in between that.
That's the button shop here in Poughkeepsie?
The button shop in Poughkeepsie was a branch. The parent shop was in Newark, and they folded up in March, so I've been doing odd jobs in between that, and I finally come down here on a Sunday and asked for a job.
How'd you happen to come down to Hyde Park? Or to see the president.
Well, I was living there. I was living in Hyde Park, and my brother-in-law in East Orange, he says, Frank, he says, you're foolish. You're living up there. Why don't you go down and see the governor? I'll bet you get a job. Well, I come down on a Sunday.
Was that the first occasion you'd ever met Franklin Roosevelt?
Well, I didn't really meet him that day. Mr. Miller, the bodyguard, come out, and I told him I was looking for a job out in the arsenal. Really wasn't looking for a job on the place. And he said that he couldn't do anything for me in the Picatinny Arsenal. But he had some road work, and if I wanted to report to Mr. Plow the next Thursday, I could go to work doing roads.
Did you come?
I came, yes, and went to work.
Occasion did you first meet the governor then? You remember?
Well, I was down in the woods one day. He came down near the... We went down what we call the Devil's Pass, down where it met Rogers Estate. And he came down there, down to the old sawmill, rather, would be a better way to describe it. And he came down there and stopped. Then I had a talk with him. He told me what a good job we were doing. That was really the first I got a chance to talk to him, yes.
Remember anything about your conversation, what you talked about, and how long it was? He asked about your family or you or who
not
you were?
Not at that particular time, no. No, he just made remarks about the road, you know, and what a nice day it was and one thing or another, and he drove on.
You were on the payroll of the governor himself or Mr. Roosevelt or Mrs. James Roosevelt?
No, at that time I was on his payroll.
On his payroll?
On his payroll.
How long did you work down there?
Well, I worked that year up till we put the truck away the 31st of December and the first day of January we got 2 foot of snow. And then I understand I was on the mother's payroll for the winter.
Well, you were building roads all this time that first year?
Yes, that's right. We built a road down on down through the woods, down meeting the Rogers Estate, and then we went across over by the creek. On the east side of the road. And we started a little road up through there, up to meet the Rogers Estate.
What was the object of the road? To get logging trucks in?
No, just so that he could drive around and look over the woods and renew the scenes of his childhood, where he used to drive around there, some bridle paths in the old days.
Then that would be the winter of 31-32. What did you do from then on? Did you stay on working for the mother, or did you come back to work for Mr. Roosevelt?
I stayed working for the mother till late fall, and then, being the extra man, Mr. Plow informed me. Mr. Plow informed me that, being the extra man, the madam had given orders that one man would have to go, so that I naturally would be the man. But he also told me that if I wanted to go in and have a talk with her, I could do so.
Did she keep you on?
She kept me on, yes. And I also asked that when it come election time, if she would make the arrangements for me to have a meeting with him.
Did she?
She did.
And how soon was that meeting?
Well, the first time he came up after he was elected. Probably that was within 2 weeks.
Right. Do you remember that meeting with him, conversation?
I do.
Let's hear it.
Well, to begin with, I went in the kitchen door, and everybody wanted to wait on me. One of them was Mr. McDuffie, the barber. Everybody, they wanted to get me in a hurry. And I said, no, I'll wait till the madam comes. I said, I have an appointment with her, and she agreed to make the appointment with the president. So she came along and took me in the office. Well, I would estimate at the time that there were about 30 people waiting in the reception room. about 20 minutes of his time, so I got more than my share.
That's in the little office, yes. Where were these 30 people waiting out?
They were out in the main hall as you come in the main gate.
The main door.
And that was at the time, Amelia Earhart was there, Lord and Lady Astor were there at the same time. Everybody sat there with the diamonds on. When the interview was over, I wanted to go out back through the kitchen door. The madam wouldn't stand for it. No, sir, she said, you're coming right out through the main entrance here. So I had my overalls on. I felt rather foolish, but I made the grade.
Well, what did you talk about?
Well, the idea was that I was trying to get a job out in the Picatinny Arsenal. And he told me at that time, he says, Frank, I'll get in touch with Mr. Cross. He was the secretary in Albany.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll have him get in touch with Colonel Rose right away. And I'll let you know within a week. Within a week, he let me know. That was the most of what we talked about. But he also told me. Now, he said, I remember when you came here the first time that you wanted to get an interview with me, seeing what I could do with you. But he says, you know, you have no idea how those Army and Navy people fight together down in Washington. The Picatinny Arsenal is run by the Army. The fact that I was connected with the Navy, that would do you more harm than good. That's the way you put it up to me.
Did you get on out the Arsenal?
I got on, and I would estimate at the time that was during the, you might say the worst of the Depression. I went on shortly before Christmas, and I stayed there 2 months. And just before the 2 months were up, Colonel Rose was transferred to Panama. And it was through Colonel Rose's efforts that he got me on. Now, the only way that he could legally employ me was to put me on a job that had a designation, but nobody was working it. So I was hired as a machine adjuster. It was in the book, and nobody working it. And where toolmakers were working 10 days a month, I went on full time. Well, of course, that caused friction. So when it come time to go, Mr. Rose, or Colonel Rose rather, told me, he says, Mr. Dreyse would be surprised, he says, the time I've had ever since you've been there. Constant. Oh dear.
Complaints?
Well, not complaints, but he says, anyway, writing letters back and forth from the civil service offices on Washington Street there in New York.
Oh, yes.
He says, that's been going on constantly. And he said that they finally made a rule that if I wish to hire a man in that position, then I must take an available from the machinist, the legible list. The CIA had been on.
What happened after you got laid off there? You came back to high school?
I came back and I went, I guess I was out of work about 5 weeks. And then the president sent for me. He had some more roads he wanted to build, and he wanted that same man that built the road on the down towards the river. He wanted me back again. And that time I come back and I stayed with him.
You worked under Mr. Plow?
Under Mr. Plow, but that was on the president's payroll.
Were you doing any forestry work of any kind then?
Well, we started the first, in 1936 was the first trees we put out.
You didn't put out any trees, 32, 33, 34?
We outside of just a few odd trees that he had shipped in, but no real forestry plantation, I wouldn't say, no.
Well, what was the type of work you did then from 33 to 30?
Mostly building the roads and trimming up the woods in the winter, you know, and we'd cut down all the dead wood and work up the wood, burn the brush.
Cut any lumber at all, or just dead
stuff?
No,
I didn't have any.
Dead stuff and wood?
Just wood, cordwood.
Was there any lumber coming out of the
Not at that time, no.
Well, when did you start, where did you start your forestry or reforestation or Christmas tree work, whichever it was, in 36?
Well, that was almost back of where Mr. Hutchinson was living, over across the creek. There's a lot back in there, between there and the woods. We always call that the 1936 lot.
How did you go about planting those trees?
Well, we'd take a line and we'd put flags on the line. We'd have a pole on the end of each end of the line. Then we'd have flags on the line 3.5 feet apart. and the poles would be 3.5 too. So we'd start with a man would be on each end and a man at each flat. He would have a mattock and also carry a pail of trees. When we get one row then, the man would lay a stick down and measure it. Each man, the man on each end, would measure the distance to the next place where it's a plant. And we go along that way. Every 3.5 feet, plant a tree, and every 3.5 feet on the line.
How many were there in the crew?
Well, we generally had 9 or 10.
Now that is in 36. That would be under Mr. Plow's direction?
Yeah.
Or Mr. Lineker?
No.
Mr. Plow. How many of you were there on the regular force?
Just two.
You and Mr. Plow?
No. Charlie Kernan and myself.
Oh, I see. And then you pick up these other three or four.
Well, we say when it comes time to plant trees, then we pick them up, yes.
Well, has Kern been working with you two all this time?
Yeah.
Regular down
well,
the road?
He came on that summer, yes. He came on that same summer.
That's
on
36
the road.
Or 32?
I think 32, sir. That'd be about 33.
By 33.
That'd be in the summer and the spring of 33 that he wanted those other roads. Then we started those. That's right. And from then on, we kept building roads. And when it would come winter, we would clear out fields for the next planting. And also, plantings that he did have in that were grown up, red pine and white pine, we'd thin those out and trim those trees. So we were kept busy. We would build roads just as long as the weather would allow. Then we would go trimming the trees. And
most of those roads were built over on the beyond Violet Avenue.
Yes, that's right.
Did you build any in on the farm where Mo Smith was living?
No. But what we would do, we would go through all of the roads. There were two main roads. We call that the farm road between Mo Smith and the mother's farm. And then this main road from the library on over to Violet Avenue, we would keep those scraped and keep the brush cut down.
Mm-hmm.
And when we come over on this side, go down the hill, we'd also keep those trimmed up too.
Mm-hmm. Did you do any work around Val Kill Cottage in that section?
Well, we built a road right where the present garage is now. We started there. That road only run about as far as the garage. We started there and run up along what was at that time the Newbold property, up to, I'd say maybe half a mile. Then we had to turn back because we were on the other property line, see?
Yes.
Eventually, they took over the Newbold property, and then we started building roads on the property up to the Jones property, which was out towards Green Street.
How about the property where Hilltop is? Top Cottage.
Well, they built that Top Cottage in 1938, and we had started in and got that road up there so they could do that.
That's that.
Previous to building the cottage.
Then up until you came with us, you did no work over around the garden or the house.
Well, once in a while, I'd come over and help Mr. Plow out. We would do that. We'd help out picking the apples, and we'd help spray them. And also, once in a while, I'd go in the greenhouse and work. See, when he'd be short a man, be stuck, he'd come over and get
it. You weren't regularly assigned to work over here on the mother's place?
I was not, no.
On this particular section. When did Mr. Lineker come on?
He came on in June 12th, 1939. Right after the King and Queen were there. He took over, he came on then, rather. Took over sometime later than that because Mr. Plow still continued to supervise it for a few weeks after that. And then Mr. Lineker.
The Lineker took charge of the forestry and the work over beyond Wild Avenue, not over here.
Excepting when there was forestry work to do with his crew.
Yeah.
The crew still consists of them.
Who was the two that left?
Mr. Lineker, Charlie Kernan, and myself.
Yourself. That's what I was getting at. Yeah. That there was sort of a separation between the
there was
the two groups. Mm-hmm. Right. Do you remember any later visits or conversations with the president?
Oh, every time he'd come up, we would have a conversation.
What sort of thing?
Well, it would be mostly about the roads and the forestry and the. But the first thing he'd always ask me about the family. How's the family getting along? Would you want to go up to the time of the war?
Any time, yes.
Well, every time when he'd come up, of course, naturally, I was working on the roads. Now, this would be, I would say, before Mr. Langer comes here. So
right.
When I was working on the roads, he'd come over, and the first thing he'd ask me was, well, where's the boys? Or how's the first thing he'd ask that? How's the missus? How's the kiddies? Where's the boys? What they doing? Where's Kim? Where's Don? Where's Freddy? And I would tell them, and all the time those boys were overseas, it was mail going from the White House, and when it comes holidays, packages of food and different things went to them. But he was very much interested in the boys. He could call every one of them by name. We'd have 10, 11 of them lined up, you know them all by name. I got a boy in Albany, in Greenbush. We always talk about Albany. He works in Troy, lives in Greenbush. And he didn't get around very often, but he even knew him. The fact that he was over cutting wood one time for me, I had another fellow engaged to cut the wood, and they come up time pretty near to plant the trees, and this fellow didn't show up. So I told my boy, go down and cut the wood, and I'll take it home myself. So he stopped and wanted to know who this boy was. And his name was Leo, my son, and he told him who he was. Well, everything was all right then.
The president ever make any comment about trees or about his forestry, how his feeling toward trees and so on when you were working or he was out with you?
Well, he was, you could see by his conversation that he was always interested. He wanted to know just what you were doing and just how they were planted and how the previous plantations were coming. And he would talk once in a while about the tulip poplars, how were they coming down. That was his favorite tree. I think that's the information you were looking for. And then he was also very much interested in the red and the white pines, and he would ask information about them, the different places he hadn't been able to get to.
Well, now, did he drove in to the field, maybe he didn't, while you were planting. Did he ever come in while you were planting?
Oh, yes, yes.
Now, did he actually supervise, have ideas on your planting, or did he take the words of, say, Mr. Brown, this is the way the trees ought to go in?
Well, more and more, take the word of Mr. Brown. And then he would talk it over with us, for instance. Now, there was one time when we were planting that big patch. There was 44,000 there, right directly back of Mr. Lenniger's house. He drove over there. And we had quite a conversation that day about planting them. But you might say his conversation would consist mostly on just what are you doing and how are you getting along. In other words, I think what you're getting at is it's been currently believed that he did take personal charge and give directions. No, I couldn't say that.
That's what I'm reading
out. That is as far as the trees are concerned. When it came to laying out the roads and saying how he wanted the roads built, yes. He would tell me what to do up until the time, of course, Mr. Lineker came. He would tell me just what he wanted to do, just where he wanted to go. And he would drive up and say, well, now, Frank, I want to go this way. So I would clear a path out so he could drive his car up, make a place for him to turn around. And from that point, he'd point out
someplace
else he wanted to go to.
I see.
And that's the way we, according to his memory, where he used to roam around on horseback. That was where he wanted those roads.
Oh, I see. He was trying to get a car trail that would go
to the spot
that he used to go when he was riding.
That was it. And of course, even those adjoining properties, he used to ride around those too. So he was also just as much familiar with the adjoining properties as he was with his own.
Mm-hmm. I guess. Do you remember any conversations about Hyde Park or about the land and so on,
out west. And when he come back, he wanted me to do something up at the Hilltop House. So he got me in the car, and I don't remember whether or not Ambassador Davis from England was there, Joe Davis, at that time. But anyway, we got talking about the lay of the land. So I said to Mr. Roosevelt, I know that there must be some strong reason for so many of you people settling in the Hudson Valley. Now, I said, you've just come back from the West. I said, I know you can travel pretty near wherever you want. I said, where do you like it the best? Out west or here? Frank, he said, I like it here. Now, I said, for instance, out in Wyoming, I could drive along and I could see ahead of me for 100 miles, see the mountains, see the snow on the mountains. But he says, on the other hand, nobody lived there. And here, he says, look at what I see here. I can look down and see all the people, see where they're living. He says, people in those houses, making their living, going back and forth to work, sending their children to school. Why, he says, by all means, this is the best place for me. He says, I like it better here.
No story, I remember you telling me a year or two ago that sounds fantastic. Some story about your use of old tires and the president sending a newspaper man off on a wild goose chase. What was that? I've forgotten the details of it.
Well, the Dream House was already built and the war was on. And Mr. Plow came over one day. He had a man with him. And he said, Frank, he said, you must be the man we're looking for, because we've interviewed everybody else on the place and nobody seems to know anything about the man. Well, I said, would you mind telling me what you're talking about? Well, he said, this man tells me that the president told him he has a man on the place making his own tires. Well, I said, you keep on out looking, because I'm not making any tires. So that was late in the fall. The next spring, it would coincide with one of these questions you asked me. Did he ever drive out in the field? This particular time, he did drive in that field back at Lenigas. And after we had talked over the business, what we were going to do, clear the land, you know, and the roads we were going to build that summer, then I told him I had something I wanted to ask him. I said, in fact, I'm pretty sure you're the guilty partner. You remember sending a man up here to see me about making tires? Well, he busted right out. He said, yes, Fred, he says, I do. But he says, on the other hand, he says, I didn't tell that man any such thing. He says, he came to me and insisted I had a man making it much in his own tires. So he says, I decided to play along with him. Well, he wanted to know how he got it. He says, of course, I had to think fast, and I told him, well, first he gets an old rim, and he gets a big heavy rope, and he winds it around and around, and he comes to the end. Then he reverses it, goes around and around until he comes to the end again. And then he gets some tar and fills up the crevices, gets a hold of an old shoe and glues it on, and there you are, he's got a tire. Well, I shook my finger at him, and I said, look, Mr. Roosevelt, do you mean to tell me, on the strength of that story, that that man came all the way up from Washington to see me? Well, he said, why didn't you string him, Frank? I thought he struck him well enough.
If I remember correctly, you along with some of the others helped with the party they had up at Hilltop for the King and the Queen. Is that right?
That's right.
Was it up at Hilltop? What was your part in that?
Well, the first thing I had done, I got it ground all around there in beautiful condition.
So that's up at Hilltop?
That's at the Hilltop. Now, he came up there that morning, and on the lower road, going, we built a road when we come in on the lower section, then they make a turn, come around on the higher section right at the door where they would go in. Well, on the bank between those two sections, I had the beautiful green. And the first thing he says, Frank, he said, will you tell me something? How did you do it? Here I was here 3 weeks ago and you had nothing but rocks there. Now you got green grass going on. I said, that's only an illusion, Mr. Roosevelt. I said, I planted grass, but I also planted oats. And what you see is the oats. I said, oh, it did look beautiful. Well, then, my particular job at the time was to get the fire ready for to cook the hot dogs.
Well, you have open fire?
We had an open fire, I guess, but a charcoal grate.
Well, the upshot of the matter was...
Is that a permanent thing up there, or something?
No, we just put it up to build it up with stone, put the grate over it, and they didn't get enough charcoal. So the wind was blowing from the south. The fire was on the north side. Well, the party was delayed quite a little, and the upshot of that was that the charcoal all burned up, and I had to put a little wood on. Well, just the minute that the king and queen got set down on that front porch, the wind changed, and they got all the smoke from the fire. Well, I never heard anything about it, but I expected to.
I didn't want you to roast Frankfurters for that whole gang that was up there, or just the president's party?
The president's party, in other words. They were on the front porch. Yeah.
The other people didn't eat.
No. Most of the people, I would say there was a couple of hundred of them there. They brought their own lunch. In fact, the invitation reads that way. If you wish, you could bring a box lunch. And the guards will assign you a place in the
grill. What else was served besides hot dogs? Remember?
At that time, they did have soda water. And I remember they had a lot of beets because all over the kitchen wall where they were getting them out the dishes, they had them pretty well spattered on the wall. I don't remember just what they did because I didn't get up too close to where they were eating.
You're the one who was in charge of the fire and the
cooking
out there. I don't think of any more. Thank you. Any other stories that you happened to occasion? What was the last time you saw the president?
The last time I saw him was at Christmas, before he died.
Christmas party?
Yeah, at the Christmas party.
That'd be where?
That was in the home. No, that was in the library, in the memorial library.
Had the staff over there.
But I could tell you a little story before that.
Okay.
Now, that same year, years ago, I had TB. And that year, I was coughing very hard. I began to worry about that coming back on me. So I wrote a letter to him asking if he could get me in the library for a while at least for the winter. So I got a letter back from him. He said, Frank, I'll be up at election time, and I'll come over and have a long talk with you. And he kept his word. He did come over. And I was working nearby the Dream House, or the Hilltop House, as they called it at the time, and he called me over to the car. I put my foot on the rum board. His friend, he said, I'm awful sorry to hear that you're sick. And I give a look at him, and I jump. And I know he must have noticed it. The man had death in his face then. And I come back and I told Mr. Plow. And Mr. Plow, I said, I'll give you 10 years longer any day in the will of the president. That man was going to die. I had a conviction he was going to die then. And somehow or other, he seemed reluctant to leave. It was a bitter cold day, and he talked and talked and talked. Later on, I found out that he did the same thing over the farm. He just, seems as though he figured that would be the last time he'd see the boys, and they just hung on and hung on. Well, then he did come up at Christmas, and I had another conversation with him in the library. I remember that now. It was in the library at Christmas time. Well, then he came up. He came up in March, but I didn't get a chance to see him. Then he went back to Warm Springs and died. But there was all talking about the woods. He would ask my opinion on things. Now, for instance, along the Jones Road, as I call it, the Jones property, there was one time we had a forked oak tree, and he'd already been talking to Mr. Lennox about it, and he called me over. And he said,